is the Rebel Author Podcast, where we talk about books, business, and occasionally bad words. Hello, Rebels, and welcome to episode 239 of the Rebel Author Podcast. Today, I'm joined by Liz Lincoln, and we are going to be talking all about burnout, something, admittedly, I may have flirted with the odd time or two. A comment on Mariella's episode, Kerry Hodisky, author, said on Instagram, said, "This episode is so timely. I've been playing with tarot while outlining my series. I don't know much about them yet, but I'll pull a couple of cards, look at the images to see if that will spark something when I'm stuck. Now I want to learn all of the things." Okay, so in personal news and updates then, well, it's been a week. I have basically not written any words since the last episode, I don't think, partly because I got stuck. Now, normally I will get stuck around the 70% mark in a draft, and what usually happens is I've messed up the beginning and I have to go back and fix it. However, this time I only got 8,000 words in when I realised I messed up the beginning. Like, this is very me in terms of my process. I almost always change the beginning of the book. And anywho, so that ground me to a halt a little bit whilst I was trying to fix that. Also, I have been trying to hand off my accounts to a bookkeeper and a new accountant, and that has been hard. I'm basically now hands off that entirely. It's just been a lot to like get all the information. I still got another meeting this week. And then, it's just been a lot, basically. And we're still trying to close down the account. So I think that my annual lessons learned is going to be late. I did promise a money kind of section of it, and I'm not going to be able to do that without my accounts being signed off. So I'm going to just, it will probably be a week or two late, I think, but we shall see. It depends sort of what happens in the next week, basically. I have also been working with a new virtual assistant. I'm not going to mention any names or anything. Obviously, they're still getting used to me. We're just trialing things out. I think it's going to be fantastic. This person is extremely competent, and I'm super excited. And it's basically just because I need more doing. My coach kicked my ass essentially and was like, either you choose things to take off your list or you outsource more. It's me. So I chose to outsource more and not take things off the to-do list. So I am now working with somebody else, and I am hoping that that is going to free me up and free my brain up to enable me to do lots more things. So we shall see. I have also had to work through the outline and fix that. And I can't remember timeline wise whether or not last week I'd done the naughty narration, but I did three bonus scenes for Kickstarter, which were just basically smut scenes. And then I narrated them, and it was quite the experience to narrate your own smut, let me tell you. But oh my God, I loved it. I had so much fun. It was really, really fun. And I got to do character voices, which is what I always wanted to do. And so they have now been delivered and stuff to Kickstarter, but I am in the process of getting them loaded to my website. So this is the Ruby website, but I'm just having a cover designed now, and I'm going to, I mean, they're only small, it's like 10,000 words, about 40 pages, but it will be in paperback, audio and ebook. So I am going to have that on my website very soon. So if you want to hear my dulcet tones speaking smut in your ear, then you can. I've had some hilarious reactions to it as well. A few people have messaged me on Instagram their sort of facial reactions and stuff, and it's made me giggle. I've absolutely loved seeing people's facial expressions as they listen. It's really cracked me up. So, yeah, I think that's probably it. The other thing that's going on, a lot of life stuff. Obviously, I've mentioned like the accountant bits. My wife has now started her new job, which is about an hour and 15, an hour and 20 minutes away. It's quite the change in the house. She's home considerably later. So we're all trying to get used to that. She's now also working at home one day a week. So my silent house is not so silent one day a week. I'm getting used to that. But it, you know, I don't like talking on the phone. I won't pick up the phone to anybody, really, unless I'm forced to. And I am forced now to have more conversations with my wife on the phone. I don't really like talking on the phone. I would much prefer not to do that. It is also interrupting my audiobook time because quite often I'm cooking, so I'm finding that I'm able to listen to audiobooks a little bit less. But obviously, you know, when she gets back, she's exhausted because it's a brand new job. And so she's, you know, needing to go to bed early. So that is the time that we're getting to speak to each other at the moment. So it's quite the shift, but it is the step up that she needs and wants. And so I'm super excited for her. But understandably, it's changes at home. And I suppose we're always in this life change, this constant iteration and tweaking of what we're doing and how we're, yeah, experiencing our lives. So anyway, big changes at home as well. And on that home front, our big family holiday to New Zealand, of which I will be at the Romance Writers of New Zealand conference at the end of that holiday. So that's in July and August. The conference is the 9th to the 11th of August. Looks like we are running up on finalising the schedule for that trip. We are away for 24 days. I can't fucking believe it. It's going to be the longest amount of time I've ever been away from the house. We're going to look at a cattery for the cats this weekend. And it's going to be a lot. But I'm very, very excited because I think they've managed to schedule in every single trip, adventure and activity that we wanted to do. So I have a question for you. For anybody that's done a lot of travelling, and I have done a lot of travelling, but I've never really done like a travel journal. I wondered if anybody has any tips or advice on like scrapbooking or like any... Are there particular things that I should take? I've got a mini black and white, heat printer thing. But I'm wondering if I need to get like a little colour printer, you know, one of those like ones that you can attach to your phone or whatever. I don't know. Like for those of you who do kind of scrapbooking, journaling and stuff, it feels like the trip of a lifetime, like a once in a lifetime, and I really want to record it. And I'm a super stationary geeky nerd, so please do share all of the things that you think I should take if you do that kind of stuff. All right, I think that is probably it from me this week. Rebel of the week this week is Angela. Angela says, I was raised in a strict Catholic household. Watching a PG-13 movie was forbidden. Sugary drinks, forbidden. Leaving shoes by the door, forbidden. Lots of forbiddens in my childhood. So in my senior year of high school, the super popular, bordering on mean girls approached me and said, hey Guido, that was my maiden name, we are going to get tattoos after school, are you in? I looked at these prissy girls and thought, there's no way in hell any of you are going to actually go through with it. They insisted that they were, and I thought, I've got to see this. We went to the local parlour, and once they saw how it's really done, they all started to chicken out. I, on the other hand, wandered over to the designs to see if there was even a design I liked. Turns out, I was the only one out of six people who showed up that actually sat in the chair. I settled on a gecko design because in the wild, geckos can lose their appendages to escape danger and then grow them back. I wanted my tattoo to not only show the prissies how tough I was, but also I knew it was forbidden. I didn't ask my parents for permission. I made my choice and paid for it with my allowance. When my father found out, he was enraged. He didn't speak to me for 21 days after. Holy mother of fuck. Yes, I counted because it was painful to have him reject me for my decision. I felt like the gecko had lost its tail. I felt like the gecko that had lost its tail. But time passed, my tail grew back, and my father got over it. And I wouldn't be the, it wouldn't be the last time I pushed it back on what was forbidden. I love this so much. I love that that you felt like the gecko. I mean, I hate that you felt like the gecko, like for the reasons why you felt like the gecko. I cannot imagine not speaking to my son for 21 days. I just can't fathom it. But what a brave, brave soul you are. And I love this because I have also booked in for a consult with a tattoo artist. So I have a very small tattoo of a stick man in the Greek god Atlas, named for my son, on my wrist. But I have always wanted a larger tattoo on my thigh. And I basically have always wanted one to represent freedom. So like when I felt free, basically. And I think that that is now. And so I have finally booked in. I've wanted the same artist for probably 5 or 6 years. I've been following what this artist does. So I've booked in with this particular artist to go and have a consult. Now, the only thing I am concerned about is that I am a fainter. Both my mother and I have very low blood pressure. And when I give blood, so I give blood regularly. Well, I haven't for the last year, but normally I give blood regularly. And they have to be really careful with me because I faint because I have low blood pressure. And typically whenever I go and get a vaccine or whatever, I don't know, you know, like an ear pierced or something, I tend to faint. And it's not that I'm afraid. Trust me, I've had many a appendage pierced, but I just, for whatever reason, it makes me faint. So I've got to talk to them about how I could get through several hours of being tattooed because I fainted when I had the Stickman Atlas one done. And like I say, it's not that I'm afraid, they just carried on. But it's a problem, you know, if I can't just stay unconscious for a day whilst they tattoo my leg. But also, in rebellion, my mum will be pissed. So I hope she's not listening to this because then I'll have to confess before I've done it. Okay, Rebel of the Week. No, not Rebel of the Week. New patrons. Welcome and thank you to Mags Lucas. What a cool name. And a big thank you to all of my existing patrons. If you would like to support the show and get early access to all the episodes as well as bonus content, then you can from as little as $2 a month by visiting patreon.com/Sasha Black. That's it from me this week. Let's get on with the episode. Hello and welcome to the Rebel Author Podcast. Today, I'm joined by Liz Lincoln. Liz is first and foremost a writer, so she gets it. The struggle to balance family, maybe another job, the wild ride that is the publishing industry, all while trying to find time and energy to be creative. She's burned out hard, and she's found a way to reignite the joy in both her craft and life, and now she wants to help you. Who is she to coach you through your burnout? Besides being a writer and having recovered from burnout herself, she's a licensed therapist and trained coach. She's helped many clients work through their own burnout, and now she wants to help you. Hello and welcome. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for having me.
No, you're most welcome. Burnout is a topic real close to my heart. I am super good at living on the edge of burnout. But before we go into that, would you like to tell everyone a little bit about you and how you got to where you are today?
Sure. Like I said in my bio, I am a writer. I decided in second grade that I was going to be a writer when I grew up. And I have 12 published romances. And in the middle of all that, there is a huge break in my publishing schedule because I burned out very hard and had to kind of claw my way back to where I felt creative again. I also, almost 20 years ago now, went to graduate school in social work. So I have a master's in social work, and I didn't really use it for a lot of my career, but then a few years ago, decided to get my therapist license and have been working part-time as a therapist and seeing burnout both on the therapy side of things And obviously, in the writing and publishing communities, it's all over,
It really is.
unfortunately.
It really is. How long did you burn out for?
I think probably close to 3 years.
Wow. That's. And how did you get yourself out?
A lot of therapy. I didn't really know about coaching back then. And I did some specialized therapy work, a method called DBT. And I'm totally blanking on what the D stands for, dialectical behavioral therapy. And there's a lot of skills you learn in that can help you kind of regulate your emotions and things like that. That really helps with burnout. And then the other big thing is just kind of looking at what you can handle, what is too much. And that takes a lot of journaling and thinking and figuring out. Becca Syme uses the plate metaphor. I sometimes think of it as a bucket, but whatever metaphor you like, when things start to overflow, that's when you go into burnout. So figuring out the size of your bucket or your plate, is a big piece of that.
Yeah, I think there's, God, I've gone through so many changes over the last year that like the plate changes or like the weight of the plate shifts or like what creates joy on that plate shifts. And like literally before this call, I was in a coaching call and when this episode goes out, people will already know. But I'd planned to do masterclasses for the rest of this year and I've just stopped them. And it's literally because like I can feel myself edging towards burnout. And I kind of like went into the coaching call and I was like, look, I've been on this precipice for a while. And like I now can no longer like see the wood for the trees. Like either I need to get help and hire somebody or I need to quit a bunch of stuff. And in reality, I probably need to do both. And like at the end of the call, the conclusion was I needed to do both because like my plate's pretty fucking big, but even I only have one plate, and that is like a horrible realization to come to. It's like,
Reality is kind of an asshole.
isn't it? Worst. It's literally the worst. All right, well, we're not here to talk about my plate. We are here to talk about burnout. So, like, can you define what burnout is? Like, what is like, because obviously we don't catch on fire. So, what is a burnout? What is the manifestation of it like? How do you define it?
So a lot of the official definitions of burnout, I know the WHO has one, and I'm sure there's other officialer ones. Officialer, that's a word. Define it in terms of work. The WHO's definition only says that it's surrounding work, but you can burn out in so many different ways. There's caregiver burnout, parental burnout. I guess with writers, it's sort of work burnout, but it's more than just being burned out at your 9 to 5 office job, for us, because it's so tied up in our creativity. So you can have that creative burnout. But it's when you've kind of lost all motivation and joy, and you just feel really flat. There's a lot of cynicism that goes along with burnout. It has emotional, physical, and mental symptoms. Just kind of that always feeling exhausted, but not just on a I didn't get enough sleep level, but on that deeper, like I am just emotionally drained level. There's a lot of just everything feels overwhelming. a lot of times it can be feeling like what you're doing doesn't matter, or you're not accomplishing what you want to. So that's sort of the long and winding way that I define burnout.
Yeah, I think the not achieving what you want is really tough. Like that's sort of the angle that Becca talks about it at the moment in terms of the expectation mismatch. And I know that like that was a lot of the work that I've had to do in coaching, which is now being augmented by therapy, because I expect myself to do impossible feats of work. And that was like the first thing my coach got me to do was to track how much I actually produce. And then and that was horrible.
Having like we all have
Reality.
to-do lists, but having a done list where you look at, okay, today I actually accomplished all these things, can be a big help in mitigating that I'm not accomplishing what I want to, because you are seeing then what you are accomplishing, and it's usually more than we think.
Yeah, I might have to split my Hobonichi page in two and have the to-do list on one. Mind you, the problem is half the time the to-do list reaches longer, it goes across the whole thing, but maybe I do to-do and done. Okay, so you've kind of talked about like when it's at its height and what it looks like. What are some of the early warning indicators? Like how can we spot it? Because I think often what happens is we know when we literally have the car accident into the wall and come crashing down at a horrendous stop. So like are there ways to notice it early?
A lot of times we are really bad at identifying our own burnout. I know the last time I was in burnout, I literally needed my therapist to say, as I'm sitting there in therapy sobbing, like, "Liz, you're burnt out." And I was like, oh yeah, I am. It's a lot of different levels of symptoms. You've got emotional symptoms like the cynicism, feeling like you're ineffective and not accomplishing things. For writers, it often manifests as just what we call writer's block, where we just, our creativity seems totally drained out and we just can't write. A lot of times there's chronic fatigue, muscle pain and headaches. Sleep disturbances where you're either sleeping too much or not sleeping enough. Sometimes you can even it'll affect your immune system enough that you start getting frequent colds or things like that.
Damn. You are listing off
There's
quite a few things that I have been experiencing recently. This is like not the muscle pain, but certainly I have had a string of headaches, and I have, and my wife even turned around to me and said, "What the fuck is wrong with you? You keep picking up colds. You never pick up colds." She was like, "You like your immune system is rock solid." She was like, "Why are you sick again?" And it's literally like this last year has killed me. I am so fucking tired. And and literally my coach made me write a series of emails quitting, well, not quitting, pausing, and to give me that time. And like that was what I spent that coaching call doing, was literally crying. Oh, like, kill me. Because I'm just, she's amazing. I love her. It was the most worst session ever. Oh dear. Yeah. Okay. So did we miss any?
There's also there can be like difficulty concentrating, that sort of brain fog that people can get, and also just loss of enjoyment, not just of writing, but of, feeling detached from your family or not wanting to do, if you do other crafts or something, not wanting to do your hobbies, stuff like that.
Oh, it's horrible. This is what how do we know the difference though? Because a lot of those symptoms sound similar to like stress.
One difference, a big difference between stress and burnout is stress is temporary and you take care of the stressor. Like, say, something happens with your kid, they fall and break their wrist or something. That's a stressor. You take them to the doctor, you get the cast, you're good. Versus burnout is when you just have chronic stressors like the publishing industry puts on us, and it just keeps going and going, and we never really get a break from it, and that's when it turns into burnout.
So you mentioned how you recovered from burnout, but like in general, how do we recover from burnout? Like, what are some of the things that we can do?
The first thing I would suggest is giving yourself a break from as many responsibilities as you can. It doesn't have to be permanent, but even just 2 days will help. Obviously, like if you're a parent, you can't quit parenting for a couple days. I suppose maybe, if you have a really great spouse who's like, go stay in a hotel for a couple days, maybe. But typically, that's not something we can quit. And if you have another job, you might not be able to quit that. But if you have vacation days, you could take a couple of vacation days. But just especially taking a break from all the writing and writing related things. And the length of time that you need is going to differ from person to person. You kind of have to be able to gauge that yourself, or even talking with a friend, or if you feel like you're ready, coaching or therapy, to try and gauge that. And then you really want to focus on things that are going to sort of refill your well.
I find that bit the hardest to work out. Like, I know that
It is.
reading works really well for me, and I know it's like a sliding scale as well. So, like, a physical book is the most rejuvenative because I will write in it, which means I'm very, very present in the moment. Ebooks are the next, like, because I am, there's some physicality to it. And so I stay pretty focused, though I tend to get a little bit distracted. And then audiobooks, I love audiobooks because I can consume, but the problem is I consume on the go. And so they are the least rejuvenative for me. But other than that, like, I don't actually know what gives me energy.
One good way is physical activity. As much as I know that like this is a hard thing to recommend for some people with disabilities may not be able to do this. But as much as you are physically able, physical activity, anything from going on walks to doing some yoga. You can find tons of yoga on YouTube, and there's even like restorative yoga, which can be really helpful. Getting outside, if you're in a climate where that's possible, where I am, it's 30 degrees Fahrenheit, so it's pretty chilly. So I don't really want to go outside and go for a walk. But again, whatever you can work into your specific situation. Other creative outlets are great, like reading. As long as you can like read without turning on like your writer analysis brain. Sometimes that's a problem when I'm reading fiction.
Yeah, that's definitely recently over the last couple of months, I've had to start looking at other things that are creative that aren't like reading and writing because I try really hard to read as a reader, but unless the book like grabs me and like hauls me through, then I turn my writer brain on.
Exactly. It's hard. And I think a lot of us too, like I watch movies the same way. I have my, oh, there's the plot, the midpoint, and there's the black moment and things like that. So it's sometimes that's not the most rejuvenating for writers. But other creative outlets are great. Like, even if one thing to remember, and I have like a post-it on my wall here to remind me of this, is it's okay to be bad at things. Like
You're saying that to the
my,
number one competition.
oh, I know. I know.
Like the hearing that's like
But essential pain.
Okay.
Yeah, but like if you take up something like drawing, you have to be bad at it before you can get good at it. Which is something I keep reminding myself because I'm trying to learn to draw better. Knitting and crochet are good.
Yeah, it's funny that you say knitting and crochet. When I was at like a kid, literally like 11, 12, I used to make a lot of friendship bracelets.
Oh,
And
sure.
yeah, and I've like started, but when I was a kid, I only ever knew how to make
Yeah.
like the
The
standard.
diagonal lines, yeah.
Yeah, the diagonal lines ones. But now I'm older. I have a few more brain cells. I've been making like ones that are all crazy patterns.
That's awesome.
Yeah, but like I haven't done anything with them, and that is so joyful because like I turn everything into a fucking job. I don't know why,
Yeah.
right? I literally make like so they're just littered everywhere in my office. Just these bracelets that I've made for no
Just give
reason
them to your kid
whatsoever.
and then they'll have them like all the way up their arm. You can start a trend.
Yeah, like, but sometimes we have to find that thing that we do for no reason.
Yeah. I do embroidery. I like to say part of it is because it's very cathartic to stab something repeatedly. And yeah, there's only so many embroidery pieces I can hang on my own walls. So I just give them to friends all the time. And
I love
I,
that.
you know, I thought about starting an Etsy shop and then I realized that would make me start hating embroidery.
Yeah,
So
it's really, why do we have this tendency to turn like everything into a bloody business or job? Like, is that just who we are as indie authors? We are like that entrepreneurial way.
that, and I think we live in a society that pushes productivity and profit and everything. So, that's kind of the way we are programmed to think, I think is,
Yeah.
but yeah, especially as indie authors, we kind of think, well, I could make money on this.
We really do. It's
Yeah.
so painful. How do you work with people then? How does a burnout coach help coach you out of burnout?
So I work one-on-one. I am thinking of developing group coaching, but again, keeping my bucket from overflowing, haven't started that yet. But we work one-on-one, and the first session is it's all done virtually. Oddly, right now, two-thirds of my clients live in Texas. Yeah, so we, kind of talk about how their burnout is manifesting, and then kind of come up with a plan of how to address that. And it's really pretty individualized to what they need, whether they need support, kind of working through a specific manuscript that's giving them a hard time. If there's like ADHD involved, some of my clients have that. Then we also talk about how ADHD can contribute to burnout. And some of it's very practical, going through like, hey, did you do some exercise this week? What did you do? And then talking about, okay, setting goals. What are you going to do next week? Things like that. Sometimes they just kind of need to talk out a stressful situation that they're going through, and that helps. So it's, yeah, like I said, it's very individualized, and kind of work on what you need specifically.
What do you think leads us to burnout? Like, why do we, like, you've talked about the symptoms But what leads us there? What causes it? What, how do we end up doing this to ourselves?
I think it's a combination of several factors. Like I said before, we live in a society that's very go, 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 and pushes productivity. And we don't value rest as much as we need to.
How dare you?
There's a I know. There's a great book called Rest is Resistance, and I'm blanking on the author's name. I follow her on Instagram. She's great. But she talks about how in the society that we live in, it really is a form of resistance to be saying, no, I'm going to take a break. People don't take all their vacation days when they have them, and kids are not supposed to ever miss school, and people don't have sick days to actually rest when they're sick. So it kind of all adds up. And then, specific to not just indie publishing, but publishing in general, there's again this very competitive feel to it. And in indie publishing, there's the conventional wisdom sort of that you have to rapid release, which means you have to write fast and you have to do everything fast, and still have time for your marketing and all of that. I really like that people like Becca and Claire Taylor are starting to talk a lot about sustainability, because I think a lot of authors are getting to where the pace isn't sustainable anymore. Because it's burning us out, because we just can't do everything in such a small window unless we give up things like rest and self-care.
But I'm so good at
So
giving those up.
I know it's easy.
Is easy. Like, and it's actually gotten to the point where I don't know what rest is or what self-care is. And like, I think I spent a long time convincing myself that because I love my job and because working is joyful, that that is rest.
Yeah, that can be very easy because, yeah, writing is our passion. It's our joy. And for some people, even the marketing side of it is their joy. And so, yes, it can feel very much like when we're working, it's okay because it refills us. But
Yeah.
we do need that rest time.
How can we be more resilient? So let's say we've gone through burnout. Let's say we're on the other side. How can we be more resilient and kind of cope better with stress or like prevent the burnout in the future?
A lot of it is the same way, doing the same things that you do to get out of burnout. Keep doing the non-writing creative activities, keep doing the getting your body moving in whatever way works for you. I think another piece that's really important is having a writer community, even if it's online. It's just because it's such a solitary job and we can get very isolated. I know I can go days without talking to anyone in person except my husband and my two kids. But I make sure that I'm at least talking virtually with other writers because they get it in a way that my husband doesn't. So I think building those communities can be very preventive. If nothing else, you can go to them and vent and
Yeah, that's a huge problem for me is that I don't have an in-person community. Like my community is virtual. And like I was just trying to think about when the last time I had a conversation with somebody in real life, not on a screen, that wasn't my wife or child. Like cute dust buddies. Well, actually that's not true because Seville and London Book Fair. But then prior to that, I don't know. I literally don't know, which is
And
horrendous.
Last night we had teacher conferences, so I talked to my younger kids' teacher, but before that, yeah.
Yeah.
I can just.
It's hard. It's
It really
hard.
is.
How do we put boundaries in place? Like, how do we? It's because half of it is the boundaries with other people, learning to say no to other people, but also learning to say no to ourselves. Like, how do we put self boundaries in place where we have to be tough with ourselves and say, no, you need the rest? Like, how do we do that?
First is figuring out where you need your boundaries to be. And for actually setting those boundaries, a lot of it is just kind of a self-talk thing, reminding yourself, this is what I need. Trying to see, okay, if I set this boundary, reminding yourself of the longer term payout, because a lot of times we want the immediate payout, and setting that boundary may not give us the immediate gratification. So reminding yourself of the bigger, longer term benefits of setting those boundaries, and embracing your own kind of inner asshole. You can just sort of like designate a part of yourself to be the one who enforces the boundaries and is a jerk to the rest of yourself, saying, nope, you're gonna go rest.
Why is it so hard to rest? Like, I don't, and like, I just feel like I'm not wired to rest. I even find sitting still and watching TV difficult. I don't feel like that. Well, I don't know. I don't know. I just don't like watching TV. I struggle to sit there and not do something else. Like, I'm such a doing person. And I think maybe society has taught us that rest is sat in front of the TV, but that doesn't feel restful to me.
And for some people, I know Becca has talked about, like for an ach someone who's a number one or a high achiever, sitting and watching TV is not going to feel restful. Resting can be an active thing. It can be going for a walk, but turning off, not listening to an audiobook or a podcast, just going for a walk so your body is moving. There's literally meditations that are built to be done specifically when you're walking or doing yoga or doing something active. But that's still resting your brain. And a lot of times that's the piece that needs some rest.
And I think that is why I got so burnt out last year, because my brain was exhausted, and then I was doing like 4 or 5 days a week at boot camps, and then I just like crashed and burnt so hard. So then I reduced the boot camp, and then my brain gets miserable because I don't get the endorphins. So like now I'm trying to flip it and like make sure I'm going back to boot camp, but like giving my brain rest as well, which is why I'm trying to say no to a bunch of stuff. But saying no is so fucking hard. But yeah,
It
my
is.
coach said to me, for somebody with so many yellows, it's extremely hard to say no, because, saying yes is such an energy generator for us.
Well, and I'm a number two Enneagram, the helper, so I
Oh,
want to say
God.
yes to just help everybody. And yeah, it gets easier, like anything. You practice it more and more and it gets easier, but that's not to say that it gets easy. Just
Oh
less
man.
difficult.
God damn it. Are there any like misconceptions about burnout that you kind of see people thinking or talking about that really aren't necessarily true, or maybe are true and people think they aren't true, or yeah, vice versa?
I think the biggest one is a lot of people think you can take like a week vacation, relax on the beach, and then come back and burnout's gone.
How very fucking dare you?
Sorry.
Oh my God, why would you call me out like that? What's wrong with you?
Sorry. That's my inner asshole.
What I think. That is exactly to the letter what
Yeah, it's unfortunately that's gonna work if it's just stress.
I
But true burnout is gonna take longer to heal. It's well, I can think of a kind of gross metaphor, but I won't use gross metaphors. I used to work in a hospital in the surgery department, so I lost my ability to be grossed out. But yeah, it unfortunately it's going to take probably a minimum of a few months, depending on how bad the burnout is. I remember a few years ago there was a TikTok that went kind of viral where a woman was talking about how it takes 3 years to get over burnout, and everyone was like, "What? No." And I think that is a severe case of burnout. It could take that long to get over it. But I think if your burnout is that deep, it's probably going to tip over into depression. And that's why it takes so long to get out of. But for some people, it does take a lot longer than they want.
Yeah, that's
And
horrendous. Is
yeah.
that the
And
biggest one, or are there any others, or?
not that I can think of. I think the other big one is just a lot of people not realizing they're in burnout, which isn't quite a misconception
It's
so
just
much as
not knowing the symptoms, right, or something, or yeah.
or thinking it's just stress and not recognizing that it's probably full burnout.
Oh, what do you wish more writers would do, in order to like help them stay away from burnout?
I think, gosh. Okay, here's one of those brain blanks. I think just being more cognizant of the symptoms of burnout and able to recognize them in them in yourself. And also having that network of friends that not only are writers, but are you're close enough to that they can say, "Hey, by the way, I think you might be in burnout and you might need some help." Having that network. And I would just like to see, kind of as an industry, us slowing down. And really paying attention to the stuff that's coming out about having the sustainability in your career, so that you don't. I've seen so many writers who burn out so hard that they don't come back. They're gone from writing. They can't write anymore. And it's sad to me, because a lot of them were very good writers, whose books I really enjoyed. But
Yeah, that terrifies
so,
me.
yeah. So building that sustainability practice into our careers, I think. And asking for help. It's really hard to ask for help.
It's
And whether it's
so hard.
whether it's asking for help from your spouse, saying, "Hey, can you make dinner tonight because I have to finish this thing?" Or asking for help from, like realizing you need to get coaching or get therapy or something, asking for help that way, or even asking, recognizing that you need to take some things off your plate. So then finding a PA and asking for help that way. Asking for help can go a lot of different ways, but it's something we probably all need to get better at.
And just on the therapy, how does therapy help burnout? Like, what is it that therapy does to help a person like come out of burnout?
A lot of that depends on whether the person also has a history of like depression or things like or trauma, because burnout or like trauma history can make burnout worse, just because of the extra emotions and stuff that are going to be coming up with that. So in therapy, you can really work through some of that past trauma to try and heal that, which then, you know, a lot of us learned very young that we have to do everything. We shouldn't have boundaries. We've got to say yes, things like that. So healing that past trauma can help build up stronger boundaries, make you more confident at saying no, things like that.
I love it. Thank you. Okay. Well, this is the Rebel Author Podcast. So tell everyone about a time you unleashed your inner rebel.
I had such a hard time with this question. Looking back, I'm like, oh my God, I'm boring. But no, I think recently, when I had my therapy session where I was sobbing and my therapist looked at me and said, Liz, you're in burnout, I realized that one of the things that was really burning me out was because I worked four jobs.
Fucking hell.
Yeah, so talk about not saying no. So I chose the job that was burning me out the most. And first I took a leave of absence, and then the idea of going back was giving me panic attacks. So I resigned from that position, and that was really scary. I loved my coworkers, but I wasn't loving the work. And it was also scary financially. But we're in a fortunately in a position where we can afford it. But yeah, and it feels sort of like a rebellion to say, this is burning me out. I'm going to quit it.
It's also extremely brave, which is what I think is at the heart of rebellion, is like taking those brave steps to lead us towards joy. And I am like, not to be too woo-woo, but I do think the universe will bend the knee and provide you exactly what you need in order to, you know, get to the other side of that. Because like it always does. If you are taking the steps and doing the work and doing the inner work as well, like it's so annoying. I can't tell you how many like self-help books I've read where they harp on about, you know, doing the inner work. And I'm like, And now I'm doing the inner work and seeing it happen. I'm like, oh my God, fuck all of
It, this is
you.
helping.
I know exactly, right? Fuck.
The worst.
Oh yeah, this is the worst. I'm so happy. You know, it's like, oh dear, I love that. I love it. Well, tell everyone where they can find out more about you, your books, and anything else that you would like to add.
Okay. My coaching business is called Owl Moon Coaching, for random reasons. So you can find out about my coaching at owlmooncoaching.com. And then you can find all my books at lizlincoln.com. And in May, I'm starting a new pen name. So I'm very excited about that. And that was something else I had to do to, I was burning out on writing contemporary romance. And I got this idea for a witch series, and it has been so much fun. So sometimes you have to change gears.
You do. You do. I completely agree. And sometimes those things bring lots and lots of joy. They usually do because change is good. Well, thank you so much for your time today. And of course, a gigantic thank you to all of the show's listeners and all of the show's patrons. If you would like to get early access to all of the episodes, you can do so by visiting patreon.com/SashaBlack. I'm Sasha Black. You were listening to Liz Lincoln, and this was the Rebel Author Podcast. Next week, when I'll be talking to Bianca Blythe all about how to write historical romance. Don't forget to tune in and subscribe on your podcatcher. And when you have a moment, please leave a review.